there's going to be times where you sit down with buyers and you're going to feel that something's off, or you're going to know that something's off. There are multiple red flags out in the world of sales. And when you know 80% of them, it'll save you from a whole bunch of horrible deals.
Every single message you deliver is really a sales call. Either you are selling or being sold. Salespeople love to brag about their skills. And the truth is, your success in closing sales depends on your skills, your abilities, and finding the right training. And the great news is, you have come to the right place here at the How to Sell Show with your hosts, Dale Bell and Scott Silvenbell. And be sure to join the party at howtosell.live and download your copy of The 10 Common Mistakes Salespeople Make.
Aloha from Sacramento, California. I'm coming to you live from my office. And today is going to be an interesting episode. We're going to talk about red flags in sales. And if you've been through enough deals, you can spot these things pretty easily. If you haven't been through deals, I'm going to give you roughly 10 different ways or 12 different ways that you could look for problem buyers or issues that you're going to have, and ways to get around them if possible. And not all the time will you know that this is going to happen, and not all the time can you say, oh, definitely this is what's going on. But there is a degree of certainty that you can look at some of the issues and say, I feel like I know what's coming next. And some of these things you learn from being out in the field, some of these things you learn from dealing with enough people and sitting belly to belly and learning where things are actually going. And I want to give you number one. And number one is the instant buy, or somebody who is way too excited about your product. And, you know, new salespeople get so excited when they're like, oh, I've got this person, they're on the hook and they're ready to buy right now. Well, they don't see the problem that's coming. They don't see that that's a gotcha moment. They don't believe that in a minute or in an hour or in 2 hours or in a week or whenever the deadline is for the buy, there's going to be problems. And I look at everything like a pendulum. I look at everything from one end of the spectrum to the other. And when somebody is way too excited about a sale and way too excited about a process, I'm like, whoa, we got to go really negative with this person. We got to figure out what's going on. Why is it that they're so excited? And if they are so excited, this is not a good thing. This is probably going to be a bad thing. And I'm not saying be a jerk, but you know, there's a point where you got to blow up the deal and ask them what they've considered and what they've looked at. And you know, a desperate buyer is going to cause you problems really huge on the back end. And I look at people who are overly excited as very needy and very desperate. Someone who's too excited about the sale, there's never a good reason for it. And so like salespeople don't understand this. Somebody who's really excited about a sale is using that as camouflage when you come in to lower your guard, to lower your expectations. And typically, at the end of the deal, these are the people who want more things thrown in. They want a bigger discount. Or after the sale is made, what happens is they come in and they complain and they say that you took advantage of them and you lied to them and you cheated them somehow. There's always a problem. And so, you know, when I was dealing with salespeople as a manager, and the person, there'd be a buyer that would call in and complain, I would quiz the salesperson, tell me what kind of buyer they were, what happened. Oh, this guy, he was an immediate buyer. Gosh darn it. Somebody who's an immediate buyer always has regrets. They always have a problem. And like the salesperson don't realize that they need to blow up the deal, especially on this type of buyer. Like you got to do some sort of reversal or pullback on this type of person. Two, the I don't want to waste your time guy or girl. You know, when I was doing leads and sales, and you know, I would get to a home when I was doing in-home sales, and someone would start out the conversation with, "I don't want to waste your time." I would always say, "Hey, it's already been done. You've already, like, if this is the belief that you have, you know, you got to tell me why you're thinking you didn't want to waste my time. What's going on?" And it always came down to that they had already done a deal with somebody else, and they were just trying to confirm the price. They were just trying to confirm, you know, what was going on. I learned really early on in in-home sales that if somebody was in an emergency, like it, not that their system wasn't working in the middle of summer or the middle of winter, it was some crazy emergency, they had already done paperwork with somebody else. And they most always started like, I don't want to waste your time. And I would find a reason to stick in there. I would find a reason to close the deal, but you have to understand why the person's saying, I don't want to waste your time. My friends in the automotive business have the same version of this with who wants to buy a car today. Like, you know, it's interesting talking to different industries. There's a different version of this. There's probably one for insurance. There's probably one for everything. But my friends that are in the car sales say that somebody who comes in and says, who wants to buy a car today or who wants to sell a car today are the worst people to work with. You know, for number three on this list, proposals and bids everywhere. I would always laugh when I would go to a home or a business and somebody was collecting bids. And for me, bid stands for beat idiots deal, B-I-D, beat idiots deal. And so I would go into a home and I would look, and if they had the proposals all over the table, I'd be like, oh, it looks like it's beat idiots deal day today. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? I said, look, you're in a bid process, and that's what it stands for in construction, beat idiots deal. So, you know, is it that you're shopping on price or what is it that you're looking for? And, you know, I would build a little bit of rapport. I wouldn't be like so brash walking through the door. Like if you're thinking like Scott walks through the door and says, oh, it's beat idiots deal. No, I would get a feel for the client first. But, you know, a lot of times people would put the proposals on the table to try to scare me. And, you know, I had a couple of different ways to deal with that. And one of them was to just scoop them up and flip them over and say, hey, you know, welcome. You got the real guy here. Let's not even worry about these. And I would judge the reaction of the buyer and see what they would do when I would start that conversation. But I would always be prepared for someone who had all the proposals all over the table to know that that's all they were going to do is they were trying to intimidate a buyer. They were trying to intimidate a salesperson. And if you get caught up in that, intimidation, instead of laughing at it and seeing it for what it is, you're going to have a tough time closing that deal. Four, too good to be a true offer with a twist. So when somebody comes in and they're ready to pay full price, there's always some story. There's always some wackiness. There's always some sticking point that you're not prepared for. And the buyer comes in, they're ready to make the payment. And this is kind of like the first version of the instant buy, but it's a little bit different because there's always a twist. There's always a story. And anytime that a buyer started telling me a story when they're like, I'm ready to buy right now, I'm like, this is like a magic trick. And they're going to pull something out of their jacket or their hat, and it's not going to be good. I don't always know what it's going to be, but I'm prepared and I'm looking and I'm like, yep, here it comes. I can see that some wackiness is on its way. And sure enough, the instant buy with a story or a twist, you got to be prepared for this. Five, the mismatch. When you watch somebody with body language and they say, I love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but they shake their head no, like you got to question, wait a minute, your mouth is saying you love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, but your head is telling me and your body language is telling me that's not very true. There's a problem here. You're going to be in a deal with a buyer and you're going to see some mismatch at some point. You're going to see some deception. Let's label it deception. When I was doing full-time in-home sales, I went to a home, and the home that I went to, based upon its square footage, based upon where it was, when they were telling me about the bills that they had and what they were paying for energy, it didn't make sense. They had stacks of heating and air conditioning magazines. They had heating and air conditioning tools. And I called them out and I said, hey, you know, at some point you got to tell me the truth about what's going on. You guys are in this industry. Who are you getting information for bids for? And they just kind of sat there and smiled. And I ended up walking out. It was my one lead for the day. I mean, I went and knocked doors after that. So this is like 2008, 2009. So they didn't really have sales funnels. They really didn't have a ton of internet, but it wasted my time. But it was a mismatch. The data that they gave me did not match up to my knowledge about what was going on. And when I called them out for it, they had questions. They're like, oh, well, if it's not right, what should it be? And I'm like, you want me to tell you how to waste more people's time? I'm not doing it. I'm not going to do it. Six, the trash talker on the competition. You're going to go and sit down with a buyer at some point, and they're going to have nothing good to say about the competition. And they are going to go on and on and on about company number one, company number two, company number three, company number four. And it's a weird way of building rapport. So if you get caught up in talking trash on other companies and agreeing with them, somehow it's going to be used against you. somehow it's going to be used against you in the court of law, right? They're going to read you the sales Miranda rights. And if you're not paying attention to what's going on, you're going to get caught up in talking trash, and you're going to talk yourself into discounts or concessions or a way to coddle the buyer. Almost every time somebody would talk trash, they were using it to play with my emotions. They were using it to say, like, here's all the issues that happened. So talking trash just isn't, hey, this company sucks, or this company is a problem. A lot of times what they're doing is they're priming you so you're like, oh, I don't do that. So I would go into calls and I would sit down with people and they're like, we're not making a decision today, which I would just laugh at. It didn't bother me because I knew that most of the time when people said that, they bought anyway. But, you know, it was just one of those things that they were trying to get away with putting me into a corner and agreeing that I wouldn't try to do it either. And this is going to cross over to number 7, which is going to be outrageous stories. You're going to find that sometimes buyers will tell you crazy stories about their life, not necessarily about the company, but things that are going on. And they know, because they're emotional manipulators and they're horrible people and they've done this their entire life, that if they tell a story, that they could use it to their advantage. Now, I am not talking about the people who have truly bad, weird things happen in their life or struggle. I'm talking about the mass manipulator who tells stories so that you feel bad for them, so that you make all sorts of crazy concessions. And, you know, I would always pay attention to people if they were really good at telling stories and they would start going down a path of this problem and that problem. I was like, okay, this person's a mass manipulator. I already know what they're going to try to do. I've got my my prescription in hand for my sales prescription to know that this is the type of game that they're going to play. 8, the story doesn't add up. You're gonna sit down with people and the story that they have is just cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs and does not make sense. And it's a combination of a couple of things of mismatch, trash talking, outrageous story. It's not just necessarily one thing. It's a couple of things. And you'll pick up on this and start going, yep, I see it. There's a problem. I don't know what the problem is. You're going to get butterflies in your stomach and go, hey, something's going on. But you got to pay attention because your body language at some point will deceive you. And that person's going to pick up that, like, something's wrong. And normally this type of buyer, what they do is you get to the end of your presentation and they go, hey, sales guy, hey, sales girl, why don't you email me the information? And the reason they do that is so that you can't get into a closing process. And I learned this beta trap, as Oren Klof calls it, very early on in my sales career, that anytime that I would get to the end and the person's like, well, we got to wrap this up, I got somewhere to go, they were trying to inoculate themselves against a closing process. They didn't want to have to go into a closing sequence. And I met with a business owner about a year ago that wanted training. So I drove to the Bay Area and I met with this guy and we were talking and he, you know, we get to the end and we're talking money and what it's going to cost for me to train for a month or what it was going to cost for me to train for a week. And he got really weird and he's looking at his watch and he's like, I got to go. And the dude ghosted me. And I ended up calling him out on it after chasing him for about 6 weeks of emails and text messages. And what it really came down to is he didn't have the money. He thought that my fees for service were going to be one thing. And then by the time that I explained what was going to happen and what it was going to take, you know, it freaked him out. And so you're going to find that sometimes when you get to the end of a sequence and you're about to talk money and the person goes, just email it to me, it's meant to neuter you and you got to pay attention to this. 9, the internal gut. This is a combination of everything all over. You know, your brain is going to tell you there's something wrong here. That means that you need to be asking more questions. What happens if, when this goes down, when you make a purchase? And one of the things that you'll find from watching like the first 48 and different shows where they deal with murderers, they have this thing called distancing language. And Bill Clinton used this as well when he was on trial for Monica Lewinsky. He's like, I did not have sex with that girl, Monica Lewinsky, right? Distancing language is that person. And when you start asking questions about the sale and they start using distancing language, your gut is usually dead on. It's usually like, ah, I got this. 10, the fake shopper. In the world of in-home sales, there are fake shoppers. And one of the things that the schools teach when you go and you learn how to do the 10-step sales processes is they'll tell you, go call 3 or 4 of your competitors so you can see how they give a presentation. And what happens is there's tells that salespeople make. They say the wrong things. They do the wrong things out of nervous energy. And you are going to catch fake shoppers in your industry. And people tell me, Scott, in my industry, that doesn't happen. I'm going to tell you, in every industry, you have fake shoppers. You have people who are, for whatever reason, going to waste your time and waste your efforts to put your numbers all over the street, to put your information out there. And I could think of about 5 or 6 different instances where I've had fake shoppers, and I call people out for it and they get really mad. And then, you know, so what I used to do is I'd pick up my phone and say, well, let's call my manager, let's call my owner, and you could talk to them, and they would always decline. I always knew that I was dead on when they were like, ah, I'm not going to do that. Just get out. You know, you got to leave. Number 11, at some point you're going to meet with a buyer or a potential client, and all they're going to do is they're going to talk about every problem that they had and every reason why they tried to go to legal litigation. So what you're going to look for is lawsuit, 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 litigation, litigation, litigation. And if someone was having a conversation with me or is having a conversation with me and they bring up one instance of litigation or a lawsuit, I'm like, okay, no problem. We all have wacky things that happen in our life. But if it's like, I had this company, I dealt with this guy, I dealt with this girl, and I had to get an attorney, and I had to get an attorney, and I had to get an attorney, I'm going to tell you, no matter how much money you need, no matter what is going on in your life, at that point, you better run, right? I'm not giving you legal advice, even though we're talking about lawsuits. I'm going to say you're in for it. If somebody is saying, I'm going to sue, I'm going to sue, I'm going to sue, you're next. Number 12 on the list, the rich friend, the family member, or the inheritance. And I don't know how many times over, you know, the time that I was out in the field selling, I would meet with somebody and they would say, my friend is making this purchase for me. My family member is making this purchase for me. I'm getting an inheritance. Now, that does happen. I still went through my sales process. I still did everything that I needed to do, but it was always pie in the sky money. It never came to fruition as much as I would like it to. You know, for the amount of time, energy, and effort that I put in, the amount of time that I put in for follow-ups, it didn't seem like it ever paid off, but you know, I looked at it as practice.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the How to Sell Show. You can join the party at howtosell.live to get the show notes, links, updates on new episodes, recordings of previous episodes, articles, as well as videos. You may not know this sales secret, but sharing this episode with a friend will bring you good luck. See you soon. Mahalo.